This is Clinical Conversations. Last month, the BMJ took the somewhat unusual step of publishing an editorial written by an author of the paper on which the editorial was commenting. Dr. Rohan Khera wasn't writing about the content of his paper, which examined the implications of recent guidelines on hypertension. Instead, he wrote about the process of publishing it. He and the paper's co-authors, who included last week's guest, Harlan Krumholz, first presented their findings on a preprint server called BioArchive, then some months later published it in the BMJ. Rohan Khera has kindly agreed to discuss his paper's unusual path to publication with us. He is a cardiology fellow at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. Welcome to Clinical Conversations, Dr. Khera.
Thank you, Joe.
For those not familiar with the term, would you describe briefly what a preprint server is?
So preprint server is an online platform where you can, as the name sounds, you can submit a full article before it's printed in an official journal. So it's just a server, that a repository of sorts, that holds articles in, you know, a complete form, but they have not been peer-reviewed or published in a journal yet.
Okay. So in your editorial, you said that special circumstances led you to use BioArchive. Could you explain?
So, you know, it was pretty interesting because we realized during the process of looking through the online program of American Heart Association scientific sessions last year, that the new hypertension guidelines were being announced by, the guidelines by ACC and AHA were being announced. And, there was already an idea of what these guidelines might represent in terms of lowering the thresholds for blood pressure. And this became an important question to address in terms of, like, the societal impact of these guidelines. But this question was only relevant in the context of the guidelines being discussed actively by the community, research community, by, you know, patients, by patient advocates. And by having our research study that assessed the impact of these guidelines both in the U.S. and in a completely different health system of in China, we were able to get our message and our research across to people, you know, which would otherwise have taken months as if it had gone through the peer review process.
I see. So you, as I said, you were trying to get your results in front of, for instance, policymakers as soon as possible while they consider the new treatment thresholds for hypertension.
That is correct. You know, our goal was to, you know, be able to have the results out there when they mattered most.
Yes. So traditionally, research papers are considered to be a sort of bricks in an edifice, you know, and the bricks are commented on, but they don't change too much. But the preprint process starts to suggest that those studies can evolve continuously. They don't do that now. I mean, as you said, they go from preprint server most often to an official journal. But the journal's view of articles that they publish, that may change as well.
That is correct.
Yeah, and so do you see a role for that, the kind of the continuously evolving organism that's a research paper?
No, I think we're already in a way past due on that front as well. I mean, technology has evolved so that we can have a living body in terms of research, as you suggest, that can be the new research paper of the 21st century.
Yeah.
We can have a paper that, you know, if as new guidelines come in, they are added on, this entire paradigm can be explored on the existing literature. It doesn't have to be a full paper that sort of is written from scratch, which reintroduces all concepts, and then it's left to the readers to try and locate all historical evidence of, you know, information that has been gathered in the space and written as prose, but could be interactive, could be something, you know, actual people can gain from and actually learn from.
Are there models like that now?
You know, there are actually, there are very few models of that nature. I think the preprints do sort of explore that front by having an article out there for several months before it's published.
Yeah.
And also giving us an opportunity that after the article went to preprints, we had the option, Julie, to actually get comments and feedback from the community and actually grow the article through the months after we had completed our particular component of the analysis in general.
And so then it's up to the wherever it's aimed, whether it's a traditional journal or a continuation of a preprint server like thing, it's up to those it's up to those entities to evolve in a way that that enables that kind of updating. I mean, the data are very important still, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Your interpretation of the data may be wrong, but the data themselves are
important. and that is actually something that is the larger point here. I mean, as you know, we might want to explore a little further. There has been resistance in the research community, especially in the medical research community, regarding the uptake of preprints. And one of the questions that has been raised is there is no quality control or check on the authors. But I mean, authors and researchers, the science component cannot change when it goes to a journal. It's only the interpretation that evolves over time.
Yes.
So, and that is what a preprint does. It gives the entire story in terms of the data and the methods. And then you may disagree with the interpretation, but the data and the methods are what they are. And the journal can't change them.
Right.
They may tack on a few things on that to explore the robustness of the findings. But the primary analysis, you know, as far as most analyses go, remains, this general structure remains the same, even though there may be some changes on the periphery.
Yes. So what sort of resistance have you encountered to the idea of...
No, I think it's just the general feeling in the research community, so to say, mm-hmm. that this is a novel concept.
Yep.
And whenever there is a novel concept, there is usually some resistance and some concerns that it might have unintended consequences.
Yep.
But to be fairly honest, having thought through this as part of this particular project, you know, I couldn't find one single logical argument that opposes the publication of any research as a preprint.
Yeah, I have seen comments that say, as I'm sure you have, that say that, well, patients may follow these wrong interpretations mm-hmm. out the window. But
I have an argument against that, too. I mean, we do these mega conferences all year round for every single specialty where all you're presented is two lines of results, no methodology, and a conclusion that's taken up by the media. And it's not only other people's research, even my research, which, you know, a simple abstract is made into a news article and a story. And I mean, I think it's the other end. I mean, I think we're offering more information as a preprint than is offered by an abstract that is also a preprint.
Yeah.
Because it's before an article is actually published.
Yeah. What have you heard from your colleagues about the editorial? Was there any reaction?
No, I think it was actually, to be honest, it was overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah.
I think two things came out. One was the entire idea of actually describing the process. And I think people really appreciated that there was a description of how something evolved.
Yeah.
Even though we took an unusual route, people don't even acknowledge how a usual route looks, and especially for folks who are just starting out. And it was me a few years ago.
Yeah.
This sort of understanding of, you know, what happens behind the scenes was useful. And I think people appreciated that. And I think the other thing people pointed out was just the discussion of preprints being brought up by a young investigator. And I think I got a few, you know, a few pats on the back for established people in the field who suggested that they really liked the idea that early career investigators were thinking about novel ways to publish data.
Yeah. Well, I'm certain that we'll see more of this. And
yes.
what would you like to see happen to the publications process?
I think it's you know, as you all sort of understand, even the journals do that, it's in a flux. A couple of things need to happen for sure. I think the time to publication has to shorten substantially.
Yeah.
We have articles in which are policy relevant. I sort of alluded to them, and without using specific details, there's an article that we sort of finished in November and will not be out in print until end of September. It was November last year.
Wow.
It was relevant to discussions November last year. And, you know, and do credits to journals. I mean, they helped improve our articles substantially. But this process is slow and actually makes your, I mean, to the extent that now the research, when we will bring it up for the community, people have moved past that point. So it has to be made more rapid.
Yes.
And I think that's where preprints sort of come in. I think the second thing which has to happen is accessibility. And, you know, I grew up in India and I did my medical school in India. So I realized at some point there was challenges accessing articles for folks, you know, some major journals you could access, but any of the journals that, you know, were not among those that were prescribed by the library, you would have challenges accessing articles. And so you are, you know, as a budding scientist, you should not have science that is done but is not accessible to you just because you're not able to pay for that article. So that open access platform has to grow for science to be truly shared. Yeah. And actually, that'll help curb some of the concerns about, this fake science or sort of like pseudoscience that is permeated, where people put out blog posts that are easily accessible, but true science is not accessible to the public.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for talking with me today, Dr. Kara.
No, I appreciate the time and the honor. I mean, it's an honor talking to you.
Oh. That was the 224th Clinical Conversation. The whole searchable collection is available free at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from NEJM Journal Watch. The executive producer is Kristen Kelly. I'm Joe Elia. Let us know how we can improve these chats. Email me at jelia@nejm.org. Thanks for listening.